Hello and welcome to another edition of The Confession Box. I'm Brandon Scott, joined by broadcaster for Spirit Radio, Wendy Grace. We're delighted today to be joined by a very respected member of the clergy in Ireland. He's heavily involved in the synodal process and a lot of expertise in Catholic education. Dr. Eamon Conway, how are you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. It's lovely to be with you both. It's a delight this evening. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. So what we're going to do is we're going to hone in on the launch of the Grace Report, which is more so a document that concerns Catholic schools and the responsibility, oversight and governance of Irish Catholic schools in Ireland. Now, I was at your interim finding report last year, and I grandiosely referred to you as the countercultural revolutionaries. And I think that's right. I think it's a just description, because whereas many are saying that, oh, you know, Catholic schools are languishing, and this is, you know, this is the direction, you're actually attempting to identify the issues and arrest the problems, and not only arrest the problems, but try to resolve the problems. So talk to us about more of the findings of the Grace Report and what you've found, I suppose, are the prevailing trends in Irish Catholic education at this moment in time.
Okay, well, the main point I'd like us to get back to is that I'm absolutely convinced that Catholic education not only has a future, but is the future. Because the prevailing paradigm, unfortunately, even as our data shows in Catholic schools at the moment, we know this from, even look at the extraordinary and damagingly extensive mental health crisis we're facing in our country and in other countries. As you know, now I work in Australia half the year. And the same issues are there as they are here all over the Western world. So, you know, I'm absolutely convinced that the treasures of the Catholic intellectual tradition, the Christian vision of the human person, is exactly what is needed to heal our troubled world. So I suppose to come back to the project, so I was still working at Mary Matlock College along with colleagues Eugene Duffy and Dan O'Connell. When we first look at, you know, there's a lot of people out there who aren't actually facing the realities of what's going on, or rather not going on, in our Catholic primary and post-primary schools. And I was a little afraid that we would actually name that if we named the realities, it could actually be depressing. But I was prevailed upon by my colleagues to say, let's go for this, because if we don't, people will still live in a sort of an unreal world. So we were really extraordinarily well funded for the project by a number of the religious orders who came behind us, the Jesuits, the Presentation Sisters, the All Hallows Trust in particular, rode in behind us and provided with the funding to hire a couple of postdoctoral researchers. And we conducted the largest ever set of data gathering for Catholic schools in Ireland, over 4,000 respondents. Now, that is pretty large, you know, in terms of, and gave us fairly reliable data. So, okay, you asked me about the major trends. I suppose, if I put it this way to you, if you have a child at the moment in a primary school in Ireland, Catholic primary school, who's been prepared for First Communion or confirmation by a teacher who's under 29 years of age, there's a 1 in 6 chance that that teacher is himself or herself regularly practicing or involved in the life of the church. Okay? 1 in 6 chance, about 16% of those under 29. They're the next generation member of school principals. Now, if you go way up the scale to the older generations, of course, the majority of school principals certainly engaged in the life, teachers and so on, engaged in an active way in the life of the church. By the way, this should not surprise us. I think we know this really ourselves on the ground, but we have to just reckon with the reality of this. Now, let me say straight away, this does not mean that we don't have good teachers. They're excellent teachers. I've taught and worked in Mary Matthew for 23 years. And I can tell you, you know, the quality of teachers, the quality of young people, the quality of people we got on our master's program in Christian leadership and education, you wouldn't want anybody else, both in terms of their personal sense of innate goodness, their love of teaching, their passionate care for their pupils, their professionalism, everything. But we have not been nourishing them. We have not been supporting them, to my view, sufficiently with the treasures of our faith. We've allowed, even in our Catholic colleges and our institutions, we've allowed the secular technocratic approach, market-driven approach to education to come to dominate. And I think we're seeing the results of this.
And do you know any more, Father Eamon, on that in terms of, obviously, as you say, it's no surprise the majority of teachers teaching religious education, it's not something they practice. But that doesn't mean that it's something they're necessarily opposed to. I'm sure for a certain percentage that's the case. It's just, you know, that generation that possibly just was never knew their faith or was never properly evangelized. And having that kind of recognition gives you the opportunity to change. Do you feel that if there was more of an effort to be getting across, this is what the church teaches and why, or these are, as you say, the treasures of our faith, that it would change those numbers?
Okay, so by my reckoning, these are very broad, but you know, we can get lost in data. So please accept this as reasonably accurate. That all those working in Catholic schools, we looked at principals, we looked at support teachers, we looked at administrators, we looked at those on boards of management. Broadly speaking, and this really, there's another report called the Genesis Report that came out a couple of years ago as well. Broadly speaking, I would say 1/5 of those working in Catholic schools are very much on board and reasonably well informed and interested and committed to the Christian ethos of their schools. There's another 1/5, I would say, to be honest, that are not interested. And if they had a choice of working in a non-Catholic sector, they'd probably go for it. And really, I don't think we're going to do an awful lot to change their view. And there's about 3/5, exactly as you said there, Wendy, that it, were they presented with the treasures of our faith, with the answers to the deeper questions of ultimate meaning that really haunt us all and never really go away, they would be up for it and they would be interested in it.
And Father Eamon, you found some interesting patterns, I understand, in relation to observation, Catholic observation amongst teachers. Now, I believe that there are changes amongst the demographics. Explore for us, will you, more of those changes and those patterns emerging within the younger cohort of teachers in Catholic schools in Ireland.
Yeah, so I mean, your question, I know exactly where you're coming from. It's interesting, and this again is borne out by data in the UK, that you're more likely to find a higher interest and practice rate among the younger cohort than say those in the if you say 30 to 45. It's interesting that the younger cohorts are likely to be more interested and open than their predecessors, which I think is an interesting development as well. And I do think that it's the pain of Western culture, that the pain of looking for answers in the wrong place and not getting them is causing people to reevaluate and re-explore. But I want to come back to this. This is the hunger that is there that we're not actually responding to adequately. And it's interesting, again, to go back over my 23 years working in a Catholic higher education institution in Ireland under Catholic patronage. We underwent several different reviews and audits. The teaching council comes in, you know, and they make recommendations, we implement them. The Psychological Society of Ireland for degrees in education and psychology. The accrediting university, the quality agency for the Irish universities, all of these, and we implement them. Never once was there an audit conducted by the Catholic Church. Never once did any external body or internal body even ask questions about what is the Catholicity of our institution? How are we actually communicating? What vision of the human person underpins our programs? That, to my view, is just no longer acceptable. And, you know, to some extent, we're leaving ourselves open in these institutions to being accused of trading under false pretenses. But it's not just that. It's the missed opportunity because the hunger is there. I'm absolutely convinced the hunger is there. And the pain, an interesting example, I spoke at a conference in Perth in January. And I found myself saying this, that whereas an older generation, and I think these are the older generations in Catholic education, maybe in the leadership, in terms of management of trusts and different things. An older education group felt oppressed by a very oppressive form of Catholicism, maybe felt that truths were being rammed down their throats. And maybe even to some extent still are therefore taking a hands-off approach to Catholic education. Say, no, sure, look, you know, let people find their own truth and so on. A younger generation, their challenge is they're afraid there is no truth.
In an interesting way, though, there's an opportunity because for that older generation, that emotional baggage is there and some of it very warranted, of course. But for that younger generation who don't know anything about their faith or were never really taught properly about it, there's, I echo what you say in terms of just the people I've met, that there is an openness there and a hunger there. But it's hard to kind of, Father Eamon, rail against the kind of narrative out there. Like when people talk, when we're hearing about it in the media, etc., when there's discussions on Catholic schools, it's overwhelmingly and through a negative lens and not actually talking about the quality of the education, the inclusive nature of schools, all that sort of stuff, that that anything that's connected to Catholicism is seen sometimes through this negative lens. How do we combat that?
Well, a couple of different ways, I suppose. I completely agree with you. I suppose the first thing I'd say is that, yes, we're in a very hostile, I've often used this example in lectures in Australia in particular, that, during the time of the Troubles, as we called it in Northern Ireland, where in the whole world did you come to study reconstructive knee surgery? You came to Belfast. They were experts on reconstructive knee surgery because of all the knee cappings. Where in the whole world now, if you wish to come and study secularism? Well, Ireland would not be a bad place. But, this is the playing pitch we're on. This is the field we get to work in. And, we can't determine the entire contours of that. You guys in media and so on are doing your best. And we are dealing with, I think, more than a prevailing secularist culture. We're dealing with what Peter Berger, who was the great proponent of secularization theory, called a subcultural secularist elite, which is a small cadre of highly articulate, very often very well-educated people who dominate in the media, they dominate in educational leadership, they dominate in politics, politically advisors. It's interesting, they're the people who probably were the ones who led people to be out of touch in terms of the last two referenda, but so that's there, and that's the reality, and we need to get smarter. We need to get an awful lot smarter and engage in the public square. But that's not where I would like to put my energy. I prefer to put my energy into the patient work of evangelization, because we've been sacramentalizing people who have never been evangelized, and therefore not catechized. But so it's not just about communicating the truths of our faith, and that is hugely important. It is rather about communicating the joy of our faith.
I know you said it's not your role to communicate in that regard, but I'm just wondering, because we are seeing the hostility in a tangible sense, because I know in the INTO's latest conference there was a motion for the abolition of the religious certification to teach in Catholic schools, and I know Alan Hines, who's involved in this, has staunchly defended this requirement because he says it's a prerequisite. We are a Catholic school. It's what we, it's the basics. These are the basics. So, but how do we best communicate the excellence of Catholic schools? Because not only in terms of grade, we're not talking about the superficial grades or anything like that, because grades can be very superficial. We're talking about the human and character development of these young men and women, and they are absolutely excellent. So how do we best communicate it in the public sphere?
Yeah. So first of all, come back to the issue of the INTO and their statement. Can we see that rather than something, and I agree with Alan's stance, by the way, it would be ridiculous if we didn't have such a requirement in Catholic schools. It just would be absolutely ridiculous. But in addition to maintaining the requirement, can we not see that in a synodal church as an invitation to dialogue with these bodies, to actually sit down with them and explain to them why we, and listen to their concerns. Listen, they're representing their members who obviously feel, apart from maybe some of them feeling antipathetic to the Catholic ethos, many of them feel unqualified to work and teach in that area.
Understand that, because you're asking some teachers to teach something that they don't know anything about, some might care about, but they don't understand. In fact, many of us still are trying to truly understand what the beautiful things that are happening in the sacraments.
So see, this is I'm given to understand that only once in the last 3 years has there been a conversation between the organs of the Irish Bishops' Conference responsible for education and the heads of the Catholic Colleges of Education, once in 3 years. We should be having regular sit-down conversations, not just with the heads of these bodies, but also the bodies that represent teachers, that work in the schools, all the stakeholders, the parents and the Parents' Council and so on, all of these bodies. We should be in conversation with them. And conversation begins with listening. To come back to where I would start, as say, all these fronts are important, but where I would start with the pain of our young people. I would start with the search for meaning that's going on. Like, the ultimate questions of meaning are not being addressed. And we address them in a very particular way. Let me give an example. I have a huge concern around how we deal with well-being in schools at the moment. Frankly, it's a secular approach, even in Catholic schools. Yeah, and I think others have been saying this for some time. And that's going to be my next piece of work and research, is to look at what's particular and distinct about how we approach well-being from a Catholic perspective. Let's take one example. Let's take the reality of suffering. What is the message that children and young adults are getting about suffering? It's basically suffering shouldn't be there. Suffering should be eliminated. You should be strong in yourself. We'll help you to be resilient. Search for the hero inside yourself, and you can overcome all this. And if not, we'll give you medication. What's the Catholic approach? Suffering is a mystery. Suffering is a part of life. Suffering is something you have to learn.
You can't avoid it.
You cannot avoid
it. I remember a famous cardinal once called it the discipline of life, Father Eamon.
Yeah. It's and that's the reality. Now, I know in the past we went too far, maybe in a certain spirituality. Said, "Oh, the more you suffer, the more brownie points you'll get, and the faster you'll get to heaven." No, we shouldn't go looking for suffering, but we should be enabling people to see that actually suffering is, and can be, with proper support, an opportunity for growth. And the suffering is a part of life. Also, that we also understand that human flourishing, from a Catholic point of view, actually comes through not to, or only through self-fulfillment, but actually through self-sacrifice. It's by laying down my life that I actually find who I am. It's by offering my life for others that I find who I am. These are distinctive aspects of the Christian vision of what it is to be a human person. And so it's not just, you see, we've been very good, I think, at defending, well, hopefully better at least, at defending RE from a Catholic perspective and RSE from a Catholic perspective. But every aspect of the curriculum can and should be approached from a Catholic perspective. I'd be equally as concerned, for example, about what we're offering in English literature in our schools. Like when I was a kid, I remember this came home to me sitting beside the bed of my aunt who was dying at the age of 86, and she still knew off by heart poems she learned in primary and secondary. And among those poems, I mean, the implicit understanding of the relationship between God and human beings, it communicated in that poetry. So the Catholic intellectual tradition, we need a whole curriculum approach to it. We've ceded far too much ground, even on those other areas of curriculum. You see, what we've done is actually we've reduced the Catholic bit as a kind of an optional bolt-on, if you're interested.
Which actually lots of the schools were saying in the support, they're not doing even the time kind of allocated. But you're not surprised when, as you've said, Father Eamon, sure, they're not even doing proper training to explain this is the ethos, this is the why behind this, is why this is part of the curriculum in the first place.
Well, you see, the point I'm coming back to, I agree with you, absolutely. But the place to begin is not with talking. You can't talk people into this. You have to give them an experience of it. And, it was interesting. I was, because of my work with the Synod of Bishops, I've been doing some Italian recently. And I was in Assisi for a language course there last summer. And among the people we met, a young abbess of a Benedictine monastery, thriving Benedictine monastery near Assisi, came to give us a talk. And she is a classmate of the owner of the language school from their own schooling together. And these women now have young teenagers, and these young teenagers are very often in trouble. They're maybe post-COVID, they're locked in their rooms on their mobile devices, they find relationships very difficult, some are into drugs. And she said that these women, now mothers, phone her, the abbess of this monastery, saying, can you help us? Help us. How do we do? How do we handle our teenagers? And they ask, could they come and stay at the monastery for a while? Could we have some kind of a time out from the family? So they've set up a house of welcome. And young people come and spend time at the monastery. And there's only one rule. They don't say you have to come to prayer. You just have to turn off your mobile phone. And they have a vineyard, and they have they grow hops, and there's a lot of manual work. And they invite them to take part, and they work alongside them. And gradually, she said, they start to open up. And I said, what do you do? And she said, all we do is listen. All we do is listen. I think we need to start listening to the pain of our young people. It's like the story of the road to Emmaus. Jesus asked them, what matters are you discussing? And then we can begin to say, do you not know? Have you not heard?
But as part of that listening, Father Eamon, surely there's then the argument to say, well, hang on, there's particular areas that our schools are oversubscribed and people don't have school choice and divestment is very slow to happen? And then maybe is there a bit of a reality check needed with all of the kind of great ideas that you have? We don't have the resources to actually implement them in the numbers of schools that we have. So that has to be part of the picture then, the divestment piece.
Totally part of the picture. Last year, myself and two colleagues wrote an article in the Foro, a fairly lengthy article, in which we argued, really, perhaps even on just a third of the schools we have at the moment. That's all we can staff, because we don't have, even, I think any priest listening to this, it has been tearing what a little hair they have left out in terms of trying to get people for boards of management for Catholic schools. We don't have the personnel, so I completely agree with that. I mean, but the question is, how do we transition to a much leaner but more intentional Catholic educational system in this country? And and this brings me to another maybe important point in my view, is that we need to realize our assets. You know, I'm not personally for giving away Catholic property. That's the very truth of this matter, to other education providers who are often working out of a paradigm which may be a counter paradigm to the Christian. You know, there is no neutral approach to education. It's always coming from some particular value system. And I'm not saying it's not necessarily a good one, but it's not our one. And, you know, we need our resources, you know. That's in terms of physical resources. But more important, of course, of all are the human resources. And as I said earlier, I think there's about three-fifths to be played for of people who, if they're properly engaged with. So everything you said there is true. In the Grace Report documentation, you will see all over the place, and it's coming through in the Synod, is formation, formation, formation. We need to be offering professional development opportunities to teachers, to principals, continuing professional development. Where I work in Australia, for example, every teacher in a Catholic school is required to reaccredit every 5 years. So also every principal.
And Father Amy, I just want to say as well, just one of the last topics I want to touch on is that divestment might be a solution in some respects, but we also must remember as well that there's a lot of popularity when it comes to Catholic education, and the feedback is from parents that this is a very vital part of their child's life and their child's development as well. And in a lot of instances, there have been reports that have been compiled, or even just general surveys or canvasses amongst parents, and the response has been largely positive as well. I remember last week on an RTE program, Shane Castle, Senator for Fianna Fáil, said, "This isn't an issue that people start banging down my doors about. It's not one of the pressing issues that I've ever dealt with in his long-standing career in politics." So we also must remember that those who actually want and who appreciate the value of Catholic education must be also catered for as well, because it is immensely popular still.
Well, I suppose I'd want to nuance that a little bit. A particular version of Catholic education is terribly popular.
Catholic education light.
Mm.
I was going to use that word, but I'm glad you used it instead. Yeah, I mean, I think that is true. And I've heard others say this, you know, a particular understanding. But if we're really taking seriously the Catholic identity ethos, and that is not to do it in an oppressive way at all. It's one that really, in my view, enters into the realities of what it is to be a human person, to understand our creatureliness before God, to understand that the greatest and deepest joy is actually to realize our smallness before the immensity of God's love. I mean, another example, I was in Assisi, as I say, I was back there again this year, St. Francis. Now, all this talk about ecology, which is so hugely important, but what understanding of care of our planet operates in secular education, and I would say to a large extent, maybe in many of our Catholic schools, is it really one of that we need sustainable exploitation so that our next generations can exploit as we did? Or is it one actually that begins from a position of adoration, as St. Francis of Assisi did, at the wonder of God's creation, and one of seeing ourselves as fellow creatures? You see, we can do the same thing, but from very different perspectives, if we're working out an authentic Catholic viewpoint, you know? So I do have concerns that our Catholic schools are not taking seriously their ethos and their identity. And also, even when it comes to issues like inclusion, and working with diversity. I mean, we have our own motivations for doing that, because we come from the deep sense of understanding every single human being as our brother and sister, you know? So you will often hear this, and also even, you know, in people who set out to represent Catholics, we're Catholics, but we're very inclusive, you know? We're Catholics, and therefore, of course, we're inclusive. You know, it's not despite the fact that we're Catholic that we're inclusive. It's because of it.
Finally, then, is it a case, in some case we need to stop apologising for being a Catholic school and start celebrating it?
Well, I think we begin in a very positive way with celebration, with a sense of the joy, as I say. The teaching follows the experience. We need to communicate an experience. The teaching will make no sense. And it is at times a hard teaching. As I said earlier, self-fulfillment from a Catholic point of view comes through self-sacrifice. But the teaching follows the experience of that unconditional love, the experience of that great joy that comes from knowing ourselves to be held and loved by an extraordinary, merciful God. And that every aspect, everybody has to be a message, really, in regard to that, I think, in something that uses the name Catholic in its title.
Thank you very much, Father Eamon, for joining us. Some fascinating reflections about the future, the past, and actually the present of Catholic education. And just one, I want to say, if people want to find the publication for the Grace Report, where should they go?
So if you go to the Mary Immaculate College website, the reports are live on that website and available for free download.
Excellent.
There's 7 reports.
Excellent. Thank you very much. It's a privilege speaking to you, Father Eamon. And from Brandon Scott and Wendy Grace, we hope you can join us next time. Thank you very much for listening.